This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good Saturday as we... God, it was so strange this morning getting up and there was snowing and even did a little bit of that yesterday at different points. So the weather just been very weird, but of course, that's, I guess, this time of year. And of course, we're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get us started with some headlines. Well, at least there was some sanity in college basketball last night. Kansas won, Villanova won in the NCAA tournaments, so they're in the Elite Eight. And, of course, today the upset Kings will all be around there trying to go with 9s and 11s and all that. It's been a very crazy tournament. In the NFL, of course, a weird story out of Houston. Michael Bennett has been indicted for injuring a 66-year-old person who was trying to prevent him from going on the field to visit his brother after the Super Bowl. This is 2 years ago. And, of course, they had a grand jury investigation. And apparently, you know, because she's 66, there's now a charge against him. It's a felony charge. Could have up to 10 years in jail. Michael Bennett now will have to, you know, report that back there. He lives in Hawaii here in the offseason. But that's a very interesting story. And then, of course, ironically, on this today, Martellus Bennett just retired. Puts in his retirement papers, and so his career is over. Of course, you know, Michael's with the Philadelphia Eagles. Lots of stuff going on in the NBA right now. Stephen Curry had an MCL sprain, so he's having an MRI today. He had to leave the game early last night. Mariners, of course, getting closer. Big game today. Have tonight, got to find out if Felix Hernandez can pitch well enough to gain the start on open day on Thursday. That's going to be his chance to pitch well. He'll get a chance to do that. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date all the way through today with all the signings in the National Football League because it has been a crazy, crazy free agency period. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are you doing on a sunshiny Saturday morning?
Pretty good. I wish it was full sunshine, but at least got a little bit of it.
All right, we can get what we can get. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
Hey, you're talking about some of the signings. Let's go right to the big potato that's still out there. That's Ndamukong Suh. What do you project, and where do you think he's going to go?
I'm still kind of torn. I still think the Rams would be an incredible fit for him because if he goes there, can you imagine how good they're going to be? I mean, that would just be outrageous. You know what that would mean. But again, I think that now the Jets are coming in, and you kind of wonder with Sue, is he just going to go for the money? Because the best offer apparently is going to be from the Jets. You know, I don't know how they can totally fit him in right now with the cap and all that. You know, with the Saints, because remember they spent pretty big, but still kind of wide open. I don't see him coming to Seattle.
Yeah. He kind of shut down his little worldwide tour that he was having, right?
Yeah, because he didn't go to Oakland, so he kind of shut that down. That was kind of curious. Because Oakland would be a team. Because, see, honestly, I think he fits better in a 4-3 defense. And, of course, when you start talking Rams, you start talking, you know, certainly the even the Jets, I mean, that's a 3-4 defense. So I'm trying to see where the scheme fit's going to be for him.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that gets me. You know, I understand Wade likes to stunt. He likes to do a lot of stunts and twists with his defensive tackles and stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing I look at him is, you're going to put him at a 5 technique if you put him with the Rams or the Jets?
Yeah, because I don't think you want to pay all that money and have him as a nose tackle.
No. You don't want to have him two-gapping down there because he's going to just get beat up down there.
Exactly.
You're going to be mad because you put all that money into him. And they, you know, folks want to see production, you know. But they don't understand. Production still comes from a guy that's taking on a double team, allowing his other players on his team to have that at the quarterback.
Right.
To get a lot of one-on-ones. But, yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think he fits better in a 4-3 scheme than he does in a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of his better production comes out of that situation right now as far as that's concerned. Talking about the Jets, they made the move. They're up there to number 3 right now in the draft.
Yeah, I think they take Josh Rosen or they take Baker Mayfield, whoever they think the better of the two are. I mean, that's the thing that I find amazing, how fast this whole market has been in free agency and how it's even setting up for the draft. I mean, we've had now 21 trades, and that trade, I think, pretty well sets the top 3. You know, Sam Darnold had a great workout the other day. I think he secured himself in Cleveland as the number 1 pick. Then you can see with the Jason Pierre-Paul trade that I think the Delta they'll take Bradley Chubb as a linebacker because they're going to go a little bit more to the 3-4 defense, and that sets up the Jets to get, you know, either Rosen or Baker Mayfield.
Now, let's go back to the number one pick. I know Sam Darnold had a pretty decent workout. Mr. Clayton, the only concern I got about him, he went 5 games in last year in college where he didn't even throw a touchdown. Now, I understand there's some built-in installation, of, you know, saying that he didn't have all the players on his team and what have you and this and that. But I look forward to the kid from Wyoming. I think he's a notch above Sam Darnold.
Well, he's very inaccurate, and I think he, you know, down the line, it's going to take more time with him because, I mean, you know, it's funny because he's got the phenomenal arm. He throws very well, but then the problem he has is that he just can't hit the receivers and get the completions. And so I think I would think if you have two different teams, I think, in two different schools right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, one, you have Cleveland and maybe Denver that they don't have to rush anything, you know, because, again, you can take a quarterback. That's why I can see Denver maybe taking Josh Allen, and I can definitely see Cleveland, you know, taking Sam Darnold, where I think when you have Buffalo who's trying to trade up and then the Jets, they want somebody to turn quicker, and that would be Rosen or Mayfield.
Yeah, Rosen is an intriguing individual coming into the draft. You know, I think he had a higher completion percentage than Sam Darnold coming out of college, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think he's a guy that has to be more. He looks more of a West Coast type quarterback than he is a quarterback that you might put in more of a conventional offense. I think he's a guy that could get out the short passes, get them out short and quick. He can bring it downfield much. I look at his decision-making. I kind of like his decision-making a little better than, I just have to say, Mr. Clayton, I like the kid from Wyoming, Rosen, then Sam Darnold.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I kind of like the arm because, again, if you're in a situation where you don't have to rush him, then I think that could really work out because I think that, you know, down the line he'll find a way. Because what he kind of reminds you of is a little bit of Carson Wentz. I mean, I think that's the comparable with him, and you see how Wentz did. So, I personally, I would lean that way. But again, I think it depends on what the franchise is really looking for.
Yeah, definitely. That is speaking of the one who got the first pick, the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
You look at them right now with all the offseason moves they made and what they've done. How do you project or see? What would be the expectations in order for you, Jack?
I think maybe 5-6 wins.
Six wins?
Yeah, I think that's about as best you can do. Because, again, you have to put them in relationship to the division and all that. And, you know, Pittsburgh's still ahead. Baltimore's still ahead. And even Cincinnati's still a little bit better. But I think you can see that they're turning the corner. I mean, because particularly, you know, knowing that there's a great chance now that Daquan Barkley could end up going there. I mean, man, that really loads them up.
Definitely.
Offense. I mean, it really gets their offense going, and they have the semblance of a decent defense. So I think it's just a matter of time. I mean, you know, next year I think they could be really good.
Yeah. Now, speaking of teams, you were just talking about the Buffalo Bills. What would it take for them to get up into that top? They'd pretty much have to be in that top five.
I think what they have to do is that they have to kind of go for the fourth quarterback, whether it's going to be Josh Allen. So, you know, they can maybe work out something with Indianapolis at 6. And that could allow them to move down. So I can see them getting to 6 and then taking Allen or Mayfield.
Yeah, because you know, from looking at it, you know, with Tyrod Taylor exiting the door and everything right now, they're going to have to get up there and get him a quarterback.
Oh, no question. Yeah, because, I mean, when you look at what they did, I mean, they ended up in the back end and free agency because, you know, they didn't really move on anything, and then you just got A.J. McCarron. Now, they got him cheap, but then, you know, sometimes you get what you pay for when you do something like that.
That's true. Now, what do you think about Arizona going ahead and paying the money over there for Sam Bradford and then bringing
in I think it's a little scary because I don't know how good that offensive line is going to be. And if you have an immobile quarterback behind a bad offensive line, you know, I know they paid money for Justin Pugh. Okay, fine. But again, is he going to be able to save the day for them? I wonder.
Yeah. That you know, and Sam Bradford, the one thing about him is his propensity to have injuries.
Right.
You know.
Well, now he's got, you know, it's been acknowledged by Mike Zimmer that he has a degenerative knee.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way that he phrased it.
And he still gives them $20 million for 1 year, right?
It's more 15. I mean, because the way that deal works, it's five to sign, five base, and five roster. Counts like about 10 and a quarter. So it's really more of a one-year deal at 15.
Wow. Wow, that's still a lot of. You know, I think they should be in this quarterback market themselves.
Who's that again?
Arizona.
Arizona?
They should be, yeah,
well, you know, they did sign also Mike Glennon, for what it's worth.
Yeah,
it doesn't excite me. But.
It's just like Mr. Clayton. I think a lot of teams are just refurbishing quarterbacks, think that they're going to catch lightning in a bottle with that guy.
Right.
I think Denver, even with Case Keenum has got a two-year deal. Mm-hmm. I still think they should be in the market to maybe pick up a young guy.
Well, and that's why they may go ahead and take one of the quarterbacks and maybe be the third team to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, that's why I know Buffalo is going to be sweating some bullets in there unless they can jump up like you said and get over there with Indianapolis because Denver is right there and they might take one up themselves. Five quarterbacks in the first round?
Yes. I think the debate's going to be whether you're going to see a good deal go for. I mean, you know, because that could be maybe in Arizona or something like that. You know, taking a look at one. So I can see because now the debate's going to be because Lamar Jackson still is very talented, and boy, Mason Rudolph kind of intrigues me a little bit.
Yeah. What about the folk kid from over at Washington State?
I'd say third round, fourth round.
Maybe put him with a team that has an established quarterback. You could possibly maybe get him some seasoning and put him in, and he could be a. He intrigues me because he has a pretty good upside, Mr. Clayton.
I agree.
Dropping the ball in the bucket.
Mm-hmm. You know? No, I think he's going to be good. Again, he's just going to need the time coming over from his offense, and if he gets that time, then I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, because you know, at the Senior Bowl, you know. He was one of the better players out there at the Senior Bowl.
Right. That's why. I mean, really, when you look at it, once you get past Rudolph at six, this five or six, then that falls down, I think, where you know you can get him to get some kind of a consideration. But I think it's going to be more the third round because think about this. I mean, the teams are going to be looking for quarterbacks who already have taken them.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and it's going to be a mad rush to get those ones projected. I just think that he could be a guy that you say you pick him up in the third round. He could be a guy that could be a diamond in the rough for you. Because if you think about it, Washington State, they run those splits with their offensive tackles spread it wide like that. He had him on propensity of being sacked a lot.
Right.
You know, I looked at it. Now you bring him to
he gets hit a lot too.
Yeah, he got hit a lot. You know, and now you bring him into an NFL offense where you know you in the third round. He could possibly go to a pretty good team with a pretty good offensive line, a veteran quarterback, and a good coach that could kind of bring him along. You could possibly get something out of him. I like his throwing, his arm. I like his decision-making.
My comparable to him is Kirk Cousins.
You compare him to Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I do. And remember, with him now, it's just going to take some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You have to have time as far as that. What do you think about the crop of running backs coming out this year, Mr. Clayton?
Awesome.
I know everybody talk about Barkley.
Yeah, but again, this to me is one of the best running back class I can ever remember. I mean, this is really deep. I mean, you got about 10 that can go in the first three rounds. I mean, that's really good.
Yeah, that is really good right now. You know, what do you think about the Geis kid coming out of LSU?
I love him. I think he's the second best back. I mean, he would be a perfect fit in the Seahawk offense. I think as he has a little bit of Marshawn Lynch in him.
Could you see the Hawks taking him at 18?
Yeah, but again, there's still a big issue is they've got to make sure that they have a way to get some picks in the second and third round. And, of course, they may have the – I don't know if they have the luxury to be able to stay up there and get him, but it's got to be a consideration. And, again, I think at 18 is a pretty good pick.
Yeah, it is a pretty good pick to pick him up. You know, he had a couple of little nagging injuries last year that he had over there last year, but he's gotten over them. And you're right, he's got a little more Sean Lynch in him.
Right. You know, hey, JB, got to run. JB, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John. How are you?
Good. Are you enjoying this Raider off season?
You know, it's been exciting, John. It's been a roller coaster ride. I was going to ask you about that. What do you think about the the Raiders and all their acquisitions for free agency? I mean, how do you grade them out?
I'd say they probably get a good B, something in that nature. And because, again, what I like is at least they're addressing the defense and they're going with a lot of numbers. That's what I like. I mean, I still, you know, you still have to say, did they get many impact players? No, but I think they got some good role players. I mean, the only thing that I still wonder about is that it's getting a little bit too much. And when I say too much, I think that, you know, John Gruden's trying to do too many things, and that's where I get a little bit afraid. Because what you can see is that, you know, are they going to, because maybe they redid and give some guarantees to Marshawn Lynch, and I think that might not be the wisest thing, because I still don't see him making the team. But they reworked his contract and find a way to do that, and that, I think, can be a little bit scary.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I know you weren't wild about the idea of them keeping him, and
you know, and the reason for that is, okay, so you give money and you get a little, not a lot, but I mean, you sign Doug Martin, and then you come back and then you say you're going to you know, do something and draft a running back high. Well, I mean, that doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I don't think that makes much sense either, John. We'll see how it all plays out. You know, I mean, maybe it's just about a bunch of posturing. I'm not sure, but I think you're right. He does have that tendency to load things up and see how they all fly out. And I just, you know, he's.
And you know what happens with that? Then you get yourself in cap trouble. That's where the problem comes in.
Right. Right. And I think that, you know, I mean, a lot of people are taking the posture right now, path of least resistance, let him do what he wants to do, because obviously he's the main dude there now.
Right. And for the next 10 years.
I think that's a mistake, John. I think that's a mistake. I think they should let. Yeah, because Reggie's got a good mind. I mean, look at what Tyler dealt with the cap. I mean, it was salary cap hell for a long time with that team when he came on board, and he finally got it to be rational. And then now you got Gruden, who may not understand it as well as Reggie or his staff about how to do that stuff right, and it could have disastrous consequences, John.
That's what I fear, because remember, they still have to do deals coming up for Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper.
Right, and Amari Cooper. Good call. Good call. All right. So, given that and what we talked about with regard to free agency, what do you think? Where will the Raiders pick in the draft if they pick it? Number 10. Who do you think they're going to pick, John?
I kind of wonder. You figure it's probably going to be something on offense. I mean, again,
really.
With all the signings, I still think that Bruce Irvin could be in trouble because they brought in a lot of linebackers, and I can see some kind of a change there.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned in one of the broadcasts earlier in the week with your colleagues on 710 ESPN that, you know, he's not even on the depth chart right now.
No, I know.
And that's never a good thing, John.
No, I mean, and particularly, you know, if you keep adding guys and doing this and doing that, I mean, you start to run out of cap room, and then next thing you know, then you have to start letting some guys go. I mean, what do you think of some of the trades? I mean, I think I give Reggie credit for one thing. I like the idea he signed Keith Smith at fullback, and then, and remember, he didn't get a tender from the Dallas Cowboys, and then got draft choice compensation by trading the fullback over to Dallas. I thought that was pretty smart.
Jamiz Alouise, and he started with the Cowboys as a walk-on player. Yeah, I think that's really interesting he did that. It was very cool that he did that. And are you a bit surprised that they signed Breno Giacomini?
A little bit. I mean, I guess that goes back. You know, and that's sometimes I just wonder. It's like, okay, going for an older type of right tackle. I don't know. Older sometimes isn't the best way to do it, but hey. What the heck? You know, they needed a right tackle for sure.
Yeah, I know they've gone and done that in the past where they have a veteran who knows how to play a game, who may not start, but is there as a fail-safe, if you will, especially on the right-hand side. That's what the tendency's been. I mean, they did that year in, year out with Austin Howard for many years until he went on and did something else.
Right.
But, you know, and Breno's been a bit feisty, and he's got a mean streak in him, and you know, and then, of course, he's penalty prone, so he's perfect for the Raiders.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, they like that part of it.
There's been some talk about, you know, the Jets release and Jermaine Kearse. And I don't know, John, I think what you were saying earlier in the week is right. I mean, he was the only thing they had at the receiving corps over there with the Jets. He did a great job. In fact, he scored a touchdown against the Raiders last year. Competitive against the Raiders last year. I don't see them getting rid of him.
No, I don't
either. Even though they did sign Terrell Pryor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think that they haven't added enough at the wide receiver position yet to start letting guys go. I mean, they and I think Chicago and the Jets are about two of the worst for wide receivers. And of course, yeah. I mean, now for what it is, what it's worth, I think you have to include the Dallas Cowboys because again, they just don't have any team speed. Now you can see they brought in two receivers. And that means that I think one more receiver added could end up costing a job right now for Dez Bryant.
Oh, I think that'll happen, John. I think that'll happen, especially given his sideline antics, which I'm sure you've seen given your reporting on the sidelines, John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that you look at is that, okay, are they going to be able to, get the cap hit? Because, again, I think if they get rid of Dez Bryant, then I think that puts in place something that might happen for, maybe an Earl Thomas trade.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know, John. I think that, I think the Seahawks are trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shedding things on the cap. And they're doing what they need to do in order to get the team corrected. But, I mean, there are certain players, you just, in my opinion, you cannot let go of. One of which is Earl Thomas. I mean, he's the heart and soul of that team, John.
Yeah. That'd be a tough one, but again, they're trying to get it to bare bones and trying to do it. Hey, Raider Jim, got to run.
Okay, John, take care.
All right, thank you. Let's go to David in South Prairie. Hey, David.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Well, I'm kind of against what your previous call says. I think now is the perfect time to trade Earl Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Your team's in transition. The best time to trade a player is when he's still almost at the prime of his career to get the maximum out of him. But it's got to be a smart trade. It can't be something like a Jimmy Graham trade where we gave up a first-round pick and Max Unger to get Jimmy Graham. It's got to be, we need draft choices because this team needs depth.
Right.
I think that's the one thing that really hurt them last year. It's not just offense and defense. Even on the special teams, you could tell, the depth really hurt this team because the kickoff punt coverage was just.
Well, see, I thought that their depth going into the season, and really their depth was fine because remember you add all those one-year players that they had, and they still had the eight guys that were Pro Bowlers on defense. Depth-wise, I thought they were good. It just that things at different times just went south, and so much of it was with no running game. A lot of those guys on defense, they get tired.
Well,
they're on the field so much.
I think a lot of things is a lot of these players now, these older players, are coming on their third contracts.
Right.
I think, do you think maybe they're a little gun-shy after the Cam Chancellor thing where they basically kind of got burned on this contract?
Right, yeah, I think I would agree, and that did cause a problem.
When you're coming up to now Earl Thomas, even if he plays the year, he's going to go free agent. Do you really think that the Seahawks are going to pay that kind of money on a third contract for him?
No, I don't think at this stage.
So now's the perfect time to say, hey, there's got to be a team out there that's saying, like you said, Dallas, that wants to give up something for a really good player. But it's got to be a smart trade. It's
right.
It's got to be something that
you can't give them away. There's no way.
No. And I think, do you think maybe, we've had a couple of these blockbuster trades in the first round that have really come back to bite us. Now, coming back to haunt us, the Percy Harvin trade, the Jimmy Graham trade. I think they need to go back to what they were doing back in 2012 and 13, where it's just, it doesn't look flashy, but it's steady.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing now. I mean, they're $2 million here, $3 million here. I mean, they're not overspending, and they're trying to fill some holes, and you can see they're committed to the running game. And when you really look at what they're doing on defense, okay, they felt that because remember, you had a preview of what it's going to be like without Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, and Cliff Averill because you saw that for the last seven games last year. And even though they weren't great, they still were passable. And so I think they figure they can get by on defense and then on offense just try to get the running game going.
Well, you think it's time for these young bucks that they all drafted last year, all these corners and stuff, it's time for their time now to see if they're the worth or not.
Well, that's why I think that they're still entertaining the idea of making that trade with Earl Thomas, because remember, they're backed up with the two young safeties that aren't going to get on the field. And I think that
right.
They have a great faith that they can do something real good right now with Delano Hill. So I think there's an increasing chance now that they will do something. But, again, you can't make a trade if you can't get the value.
Right. Well, how much of a cap space would we save if we lost Earl?
I think it was about $8 million or something like that.
That's still a chunk of money.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, thanks, John.
All right, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll check in with Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. We'll talk to Seahawks. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Joining us right now is Brady Henderson from ESPN.com, and of course, it has been a fast free agency period and more active than I think anybody thought. Did you envision them, you know, knowing that they had, maybe three reasonably good compensatory picks to sign five and lose five, and right now not be at the, they're at the mercy of not getting the picks on the compensatories for Jimmy Graham and the two Richardsons?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you there. I kind of thought that that would be a little bit a bigger part of the strategy, maybe, that they would sort of, let more players leave than they signed. But I guess I understand it, because when you lose as much talent as they've lost, and either lost or voluntarily parted with, you know, in the case of Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, I think, you know, you've got to have somebody come in there, and I think their roster right now is pretty, compared to a lot of other teams, it's not, you know, nearly as filled out as what a lot of other teams have. So, I understand it, and I wonder if maybe they're banking on some of those other free agents that they have, like Luke Jokel, banking on guys like that signing elsewhere, and then sort of bringing that pick total back up in their favor. But I agree with you. I thought that the compensatory deal would be a little bit bigger part of the strategy. And maybe it still is, and we just have to kind of wait and see how it plays out.
Well, the one that's going to be interesting now, particularly with C.J. Smith having failed his physical in that trade void, I still think they're trying to get Byron Maxwell back. Now, Byron, of course, you know, would have some value. I think he can probably get a $3 million contract someplace. So, I just kind of wonder, you know, because if they lose him, you know, they may get that third-round, fourth-rounder for Jimmy Graham back. But, again, I think you're right. They're more worried about this year than they are next year.
Yeah, and Maxwell, I feel like that is approaching no-brainer territory for them right now, just in terms of need. Obviously, like you said, you know, that would be nice to get that pick back. But in terms of need, I mean, that's cornerback is probably the biggest, you know, need spot on their team right now, at least after they sort of helped, you know, address the defensive tackle spot with Tom Johnson yesterday. Cornerback, that they have not really filled that void left by Richard Sherman. Obviously, I know that, you know, they would have liked to do that with Deshaun Shedd, but he signed with Detroit on a deal that apparently the Seahawks didn't, you know, want to match. So Byron Maxwell, I thought, played, you know, about as well as you could have expected a guy to play in his situation last year, you know, coming off the streets. You know, he was unsigned for a few weeks. I thought he played about as well as you could have expected, and the guy who knows the system, I think we've seen the dangers of them trying to bring in free agent cornerbacks from the outside who don't have that experience in their defense. So Byron Maxwell, you know, with that need at cornerback and his availability, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, no doubt. And so, it's been fascinating. What do you think the running game now stands? Because, you know, they've obviously made more of a commitment to offensive moves this free agency period, you know, trying to get a blocking tight end in Ed Dixon, you know, trying to go ahead and get a running type of run blocker in DJ Fluker. It looks like they're kind of going back to the basics like they did in 2010.
Yeah, and the Fluker one I thought was a move that made sense all along. You know, nothing short of, I mean, look, given their cap situation, say like Justin Pugh or somebody like Andrew Norwell, I think, or Nate Solder, I mean, obviously left tackle is set with Dwayne Brown, but one of those high-priced free agents I think was going to be a pipe dream, just given their you know, sort of lack of cap space. But we've also seen the approach that they're taking is sort of those mid-low-tier free agents on short-term deals to kind of, you know, sort of transition into their next wave. And a guy like Fluker, I think, made a ton of sense, not only because he comes at the right price, but also because of his familiarity with Mike Solari and the fact that he is, you know, I heard the interview you had with him on your show yesterday. I enjoyed that. You know, the idea of being that mauler that they need as they kind of get back to that running game. So, I had wondered about maybe a veteran running back to sort of, you know, give them a veteran option to go along with Mike Davis and Chris Carson, and you know they were linked to Jonathan Stewart. They had him in for a visit. I think DeMarco Murray as well. So I wouldn't rule out that as well. But I think we've seen with those veteran guys is you know, maybe they view those guys more as sort of a supplementary role, and because I think that they're going to want Chris Carson to take that job, and I think any veteran that they would bring in, I think that would be more as, you know, kind of a compliment or maybe insurance. And look, let's face it, John, you know this as well as anybody. They need that because, look, their backfield has been a revolving door the last few years, so they need that insurance plan. But so I would wonder if maybe they still go out and find that in a veteran. But I would guess that Carson is the guy that they want to take that job more
right.
so than anybody else.
But you can see now what I think is curious about the Fluker move, it looks like Ifedi then stays at right tackle.
Yeah, and you know, I had thought for a while, you know, at least since the end of last season, that maybe it might make sense to move him back to right guard. That was the position he played as a rookie. You know, not that he, you know, I don't think he really lit the world on fire there as a rookie, but you know, I just look at it from, you know, my very untrained reporter eye looks at a guy who kind of seems to struggle with his quickness a little bit, and you know, you saw all the false starts that he had. You know, not all of those false starts were sort of him reflexively jumping and sort of, sort of doing it, you know, as like an undisciplined thing. I think it was more so a lot of times he was trying to get that head start on that edge rusher because he, you know, maybe didn't trust his quickness to be able to keep up with him. So he's a big, powerful guy. I thought that would make sense to move him back inside the guard. I asked Pete Carroll that at the scouting combine, and he said that wasn't really in the team's plans. So it looks like they're going to keep him at right tackle. And I get that as well, because look, you know, if you're of the opinion that Tom Cable, you know, that it was time to move on from Tom Cable, which I know a lot of people are, I think you have to allow for the possibility that, you know, he wasn't getting enough out of those guys individually. And maybe you feel like a new line coach and Nick Solari, can get more out of Ifedi. Ifedi's a first round pick. There's a lot of talent there. So maybe they want to see, you know, how he you know, how Solari, what he can do for him when he gets his hands on him, and maybe his long-term future is at right tackle.
Yeah, and we'll see with the coaching that Mike Solari, obviously he plays a big role in this. What was your thoughts on basically having a cheaper swap of Tom Johnson at 33 as opposed to the $8 million for a 27-year-old Sheldon Richardson?
Yeah, you know, by the time it happened, I think that was sort of the expected move, just because that aligns with everything else they've done, or at least, you know, their other sort of primary moves, right? Like Jimmy Graham, he gets $10 million from the Packers. Well, you sign Ed Dixon for, you know, a fraction of that. The same with, you know, Jerron Brown and Paul Richardson got $8 million. Jerron Brown is, you know, a third of that at 2.75, whatever it is. And that seems to be what they're doing, is they're letting their, you know, whereas in years past, I think the focus would have been on retaining those guys. Now it's about, you know, it's about sort of letting them walk in free agency, getting picks back, and finding sort of low cost veteran stopgaps. You know, not necessarily getting younger, because I think all of those guys, you know, obviously Tom Johnson's way older than Sheldon Richardson. I think Jerron Brown and Paul Richardson are about the same age as Jimmy Graham and Ed Dixon, but they are getting cheaper with each of those moves. And I think, you know, I think what we're seeing here, my sort of read on all of this is that they're kind of, you know, paying for some of those past deals that they made that didn't work out, the Cam Chancellor extension, the Michael Bennett extension from you know, a few months before that, and they're sort of trying to clean up their cap right now with a lot of, you know, instead of repaying the guys that they've, you know, they've already re-signed, or instead of re-signing, you know, the guys that they've let leave, they're sort of trying to go cheaper with veteran guys and to sort of clean up their cap situation. That's just kind of my read on it.
Yeah, of course, now when you bring that up, of course, that's the next big topic is Earl Thomas. And you can certainly see there's, in fact, I know he was interviewed yesterday and basically, you know, didn't seem to be nonchalant about the idea of a trade. He says, doesn't matter to me. I'm going to make a lot of money wherever I'm going to be.
Yeah, and isn't that just the classic Earl Thomas quote? It seems like a very Earl Thomas thing to say. Yeah, and you know, I think his comments reflect the fact that there's just been a lot of smoke there, right? And I'm not saying smoke in terms of like smokescreen, smoke in terms of like, you know, where there's smoke, there's typically fire, and there has been a lot of smoke there from, you know, I think CBSSports.com had the report about them being, you know, talking to several teams about trades. I thought it was interesting too that Pete Carroll and John Schneider, you know, had a perfect opportunity to shoot that down if they wanted to at the combine, and didn't do that. And in fact, the comment from Schneider was, you know, we're open to anything. And I think we've seen that. We saw that right after the combine when they you know, traded Michael Bennett. They released Richard Sherman. So, and then on top of that, you know, sort of re-signing Bradley McDougald and then signing Maurice Alexander. So, you know, they're certainly, you know, fortifying that safety spot. It makes you, you know, all of that, I think, makes you wonder about Earl Thomas's future. And, you know, I certainly believe him when he says that he wants to be here. But there's plenty of reason to believe that that future is very much up in the air.
Oh, no, no question. And that's why, yeah, you wonder, it's like, and you figure that, and it's interesting, now you see some Dallas Cowboys churning that now can give maybe the chance for something to happen, because if they're going to have $14.5 million tied up in Dez Bryant, there's no way they can add Earl Thomas in a trade and give up a first-round pick or so. I still don't see him giving up a first-round pick. But with a second-round pick from Dallas, what in addition do you think would be the sell that would make that trade?
You know, that's an interesting one. You brought up Dez Bryant. I mean, the Seahawks, they need...
Yeah, I'm not saying they can't acquire Dez Bryant, but what I mean is that once you can clear Dez Bryant from your cap, then you have the possibility of adding a $13, $14 million safety.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, that's kind of been, you know, the one thing I've thought about this all along is, you know, why I've thought that it might be difficult to pull off a trade. Not impossible by any means, but difficult is that, you know, not only is any team going to have to give up a haul of draft picks, and I think if you're the Seahawks, you know, you're going to want at least a first-round pick, ideally another pick in addition to that. You know, that alone is a lot to give up for another team, but then that other team is you know, most likely going to have to sign him to a massive new extension. And I think that, you know, we can all assume that Earl Thomas wants to be the highest-paid safety in the NFL, which would, you know, be north of $13 million a year. So, you know, that's why I've thought that you know, trading Earl Thomas, I think it's certainly in play, but it's not going to be, you know, easy just because that's a ton for a team to give up. So maybe, you know, maybe what happens is, you know, maybe that price comes down a little bit. You know, I think the safety market has been such that, you know, maybe you can convince Thomas to take a deal for something, you know, maybe a little closer to what Cam Chancellor got last year, which was around $12 million as opposed to the $13 million. So, you know, maybe that would make it easier, but it just seems like that is, you know, if you're going to then make him the highest paid safety in the NFL, that is a ton to give up.
No question. No, because again, they're a big dilemma right now. And of course, I mean, that's what surprised me about how aggressive they've been in free agency is that they've not, you know, they've got the compensatory picks online and right now all awash. And they still don't have anything in the second and third round, which I think is still essential.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, maybe what the play is you know, I think what do they have, three fifth rounders right now, no mm-hmm. fourth rounders, so you know, who knows, maybe the pick that you get back, whatever it is, maybe that doesn't equal a third rounder or a second rounder, but you sort of add more ammunition in the fourth or fifth round, and you know, then maybe you can trade up in the round. So you know, John Schneider talks about it being a puzzle. You know, in terms of the roster building, and I would, you know, maybe the same sort of thinking applies to the draft pick thing is there, because you know that it's killing him right now not to have a second and a third round pick. You mentioned that at the scouting combine, you know, several times, even in the short conversation about their draft picks. So, you know, certainly you know that he's looking to fill those spots.
Oh yeah, no question, and I think that's going to be one of the priorities. And yeah, I'm just amazed how fast this whole market has been. Like 130 guys have already moved to different teams. Lots of re-signings. I mean, the market is pretty not bare, but man, it has really moved fast.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that, you know, you're getting to the point where you're looking at it now for the Seahawks is, you know, you're well past the, you know, sort of the big name guys, and I know Ndamukong Suh is out there. And you know, I wondered maybe sort of at the start of that free agency tour that he had, if that would make sense, but for them, for the Seahawks at least. But, you know, I think it's become clear, you know, like we talked about, their strategy seems to be, you know, letting higher-priced veterans leave and signing them with lower-cost veterans. And so, the signing Sue right now, obviously that would help their defensive line, but it's impossible to see just because I think it's clear right now that they're trying to go – you know, with cheaper veteran options. And so the guys that are going to be available are sort of those, you know, more role players like Tom Johnson. I like that signing, Tom Johnson. You know, I think, you know, he's a guy who's been around the NFL. He's had, you know, a pretty interesting backstory going from Canada to the, you know, European League to the CFL. And, you know, I wonder if part of the appeal there was they wanted sort of a nice veteran mentor for some of those younger defensive linemen. They felt that maybe they didn't really have that in Michael Bennett. and maybe they feel like Tom Johnson is better suited for a role like that, in addition to what he can bring you on the field.
No doubt. Hey, Brady, thank you so much, and it stays interesting without question.
You bet. Anytime, Professor. Thank you.
All righty, Brady Henderson from ESPN.com, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. Very good.
I heard you talking to Robinson Cano and congratulating him on winning the ESPN commercial earlier this week, and I'm really excited for opening day. Who do you see the Mariners starting pitcher being?
Sounds like, we'll find out tonight, because if Felix Hernandez does well, then he'll get the start. And I think that's what they want to do. They want to have Felix Hernandez starting, take the next day off, and then go with James Paxton. So unless he has a very bad start, it looks like it's going to be Felix.
Yeah, I think Felix is a good bet, but I think James Paxton is an up-and-coming pitcher and starting to take over the franchise, so I would give him.
Yeah, I would agree, because, see, my concern is if you start Felix, I mean, he hasn't built up the arm strength. I mean, you know, I know he's going to have 60, 70 pitches tonight, but, I mean, he's had no spring training. I mean, he's only had a couple games, and that's it. And so that what you worry about, because he's been hurt the last couple of years, I worry about him getting hurt.
Yeah. For the Seahawks, if the Seahawks do trade Earl Thomas, how do you see the Seahawks using that as draft picks? Like, who do you see them drafting, maybe?
Well, I mean, they still probably would need to take a running back, could be a wide receiver. I mean, then they'll start to get some help on defense at linebacker. You know, the key for them in the draft, I mean, as far as a priority, is get a young pass rusher. Because at the moment, I mean, all you have is Frank Clark, Deion Jordan. I mean, now they're able to get back Marcus Smith, but it's very thin as far as that pass rush. So really, I would have to think that they've got to seriously, you know, like if they stay at 18, you know, maybe get the second best pass rusher, whether it's Marcus Davenport or somebody like that. But I think, you know, defensive end is going to be a big priority.
Yeah. Me too, but we did trade defensive tackles with the Vikings. I'm blanking out on his name.
Yeah, well, right, I mean, now they let Sheldon Richardson go for $8 million, and then for a little over $2 million, they got Tom Johnson. But you know, he's still more of a three technique defensive tackle than he is an outside pass rusher. He can do a little bit. I mean, he does have some sack ability, but you know, that doesn't fully fit what they need.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Tara, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed in Shoreline. Hey, Ed.
Hey, JC, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How about you?
Doing well. Haven't talked in a long time. So two questions for you. One, how can I audition to be on your show? And two, what can you tell me, how can you summarize the salary cap situation and the actual compensatory picks at this moment?
Yeah, salary cap, they're fine. They're probably down to about 11 or 12 million
at this moment.
Yeah, they're about 11 or 12 million. Because, again, we're still waiting to get the DJ Fluker contract, still waiting to get the Tom Johnson contract and the Marcus Smith contract. Probably takes them down to 10. But remember, they'll save 6.5 because Cliff Averill's not expected to be on the team. So that'll get them, you know, where they need to be. As far as the compensatory picks, they're nowhere. I mean, they have signed 5 and lost 5, so to get compensatory picks, because they would be qualified to get a 3rd or 4th for Jimmy Graham, 2 fourths for the two Richardson, Sheldon and Paul, but at the moment, it's a wash because, you know, they've got 5 signed and 5 lost, so they don't get the, you know, they don't have that net loss. So what they have to hope for is Luke Jokel and a couple of the other guys like Michael Wilhoit and Terrence Garvin to get deals so they can get those picks.
What's the latest on Cam Chancellor playing?
Doesn't look good. No change. I mean, you know, it's going to be kind of in that holding pattern. He says thinks he's going to be able to play. I think that there's a better chance than not that he's not.
How come he can't play, and I guess a bigger question is, Averill had surgery, right? But
yeah.
He's not going to play?
It doesn't look like it. Again, these are serious neck injuries, and you are at risk. Now, again, it's not like Cam's going to retire. If he does, then he loses the ability to get his guarantee. I mean, they can come back and ask for salary money back, some of the proration. Not that they're trying to do that, but, I mean, his salary is guaranteed, so what he just has to do right now is just sit back and, wait and see how it goes. Thank you, Ed. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.